by maybe. History's in the making at Candlestick Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the April 2nd, 2015 edition of the Homers at the Bat podcast. My name is Jeff Crisco. I'm here with Joe Gruen. Joe, how you doing today?
Doing good. I'm doing good, and I'm glad that this is almost over.
Yeah, I know. We were talking, and if you've listened to all of these, God bless you, because the witty banter that Joe and I were trying to pull off on this podcast has not exactly been there for these. We've been trying too hard, I think, to find interesting things to talk about for some teams that don't have much to talk about. So, Joe, actually, you know what? How is the weather in Sacramento? We haven't talked about the weather because it's been glorious down here.
Oh, well, it's been kind of hot, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah. it's gotten hot early, and the nice rainy days we were having with a little bit of wind even just a few weeks ago are not any longer a staple here.
Oh, no. Yeah, we need it, too. We got the California drought. It's good for me, though, because no rain means I have less work to do because people don't crash their cars. But
right.
But anyways, alrighty. So, like I said, today is the NL West. It's the last division that we have to do in our division-by-division run-through of baseball. This is one that's near and dear to our hearts, as we're both Giants fans. But unfortunately, last season, the division was won by the Dodgers. They had a record of 94-68, and they lost in the NLDS 3-1 to the Cardinals. Joe, were they successful in their pursuits?
Yeah, it's one of those kind of like what I mentioned with the Pirates in our very first of these division podcasts. They were a successful team in record, but not in what they were trying to do. And I think the Dodgers were looking to win the World Series last year, and they came up short yet again. They lost in the second round of the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, they lost in the NLDS, and I gotta agree. They're built for one thing and one thing only, and that's to at least play in the World Series. And basically, every year that they don't do that is it's going to be an unsuccessful year. They have one of the highest payrolls in baseball. They're one of the most star-studded teams in baseball. And for them to lose 3-1 in the NLDS it's sort of unacceptable for the type of team that they put together.
Agreed. Yeah, they're the Yankees or Red Sox of the NL, and for them to not perform in the postseason is completely unacceptable, I think, to their fan base and to the media. You look at the guys that they have on their team, like or had on their team last year, Adrian Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez, Zach Greinke, Clayton Kershaw. These are all guys that performed to a certain extent. Certainly Kershaw did, but for them to not perform in the playoffs is really kind of, for the money they're being paid, it's just not something that I think people can rationalize.
Yeah, and I remember Kershaw again had another playoffs meltdown. I don't know what it is about him. He's like the anti-Madison Bumgarner, but he can't perform in the playoffs.
Right.
He got lit up against the Cardinals last year. So, they were loaded up for one thing and one thing only. That was the World Series. They didn't make it there. That's kind of surprising to me because they did perform. I mean, they outperformed the rest of the division pretty handily. It wasn't even a race between the Giants, who are in second place, and the Dodgers. They won 94 games, which is a pretty gaudy win total, but they can't seem to get over that hump. But do you think they're off-season additions? I mean, Grandal at catcher, Kendrick and Rollins up the middle. Chris Heisey, whatever. But do you think that that's enough to get them over the hump? There's also Brett Anderson, Brandon McCarthy. Or do you think that that pitching staff outside of Greinke and Kershaw is so injury prone that, you know, they're throwing money at the wrong part of the problem by upgrading Rollins, Kendrick, and Grandal?
So I'm going to go ahead and I mean, definitely applaud them for at least bringing in players that can somewhat produce for the ones they traded off. Jimmy Rollins is replacing D. Gordon or Hanley Ramirez, and Howie Kendrick has come in to replace D. Gordon. Both are downgrades, but not so significant that you wonder what they're doing. I mean, I guess Jimmy Rollins is a significant downgrade, but he's not like a drop off the face of the earth player. He's going to be middle of the pack shortstop as far as offensive production, and Howie Kendrick's going to be there too. So I'll applaud them for that, and bringing in Grandal was nice, but it's really not the players they brought in that are going to make the largest difference. It's kind of the growth from within. So their success this year is going to rely upon, is Puig going to make the next step and become, you know, the Mike Trout of the NL? Is Jock Peterson going to burst onto the league and, you know, be like Grady Sizemore was in his prime?
Oh, God, if only.
Can Carl Crawford bounce back? Will Adrian Gonzalez continue to produce? Can Clayton Kershaw perform in the postseason? Can Zach Greinke keep it together for a full season in the postseason? I mean, it's a lot about what's going on internally for them.
Okay, so you're saying that what they brought in wasn't to take a step forward, it was to prevent them from taking a step back, it sounds like. Because they're really counting on the guys that were already there, and the new guys are just there to fill holes. They'll do it admirably. I mean, they're quality players, but they're just trying to stem the tide of what they lost.
Yeah, it's more to stay afloat than to really take a step forward. And the step forward is going to have to come from those guys that they already had.
I gotcha. Okay. So why do you think they traded D. Gordon? Do you think that his second half collapse was what they thought was a harbinger of things to come? Or do you think that he didn't really fit in their plans? Or what do you think was their thought process behind trading D. Gordon?
I think they had seen enough of him to know that he just wasn't going to be a guy that got on base consistently enough to produce at the top of a lineup. And I think that the Marlins were tricked into thinking that maybe he can, because the stolen base numbers are what you look for in an elite speedster and what you want from a leadoff guy. But I just think they'd kind of had enough from him, and they wanted more consistency at the top of the lineup, and that's why they went in the direction of a guy like Jimmy Rollins.
Yeah, that's a solid call. I also thought maybe it had to do with it allows them some more flexibility. I think D. Gordon, sort of his arrival was sort of a surplus because they were banking on Alex Guerrero being around. And I know he's sort of a infield utility guy, but he can fill that shortstop position. But then they went out and got Rollins. And so, or I'm sorry, forget what I said, shortstop, second base. Mm-hmm. And they went out and got Kendrick. And so it's sort of confusing as to why they would trade him and then go get somebody else. But I do think you're right. I do think D. Gordon was sort of a mirage last year. He fell apart so hard in the second half that it kind of makes you wonder what went into that first half, if it was flash in the pan, hot streak that got everybody all a flutter over him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has monumental potential as a speedster, and I've always really liked him, but it's just for a team that is unimpressed when they make it to the playoffs and don't make it to the World Series, they just needed more consistency. They couldn't wait around for him to piece it together or hope that he pieces it together this year. They needed to know they had somebody to produce.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of the what Billy Beane said about why he blew up the A's from last year, where he said, well, our goal is to win the World Series, and I think that we've made it as far as we can with this group of players. I think that that's the same mindset. They're, you know, our goal is to win the World Series, and D. Gordon's a quality player, but he's just not going to get it there. We got to swing for the fences and go out and get Kendrick and take the assets that we can get for Gordon.
Agreed. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. So, so Clayton Kershaw, Joe, is he the best pitcher in the last 10 years, you would say?
To pitch in the last 10 years or, yes, or of the last 10 years overall?
Like, since 2005, is he the best pitcher that's been around? I know he hasn't been pitching since 2005, but it's hard to see a guy that's more dominant than Clayton Kershaw. Even peak Timmy has been tainted by how bad he's been in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's where my question came in, because that was the first thing that came to mind was, you know, Tim Lincecum came into the league in 2006, I think, or 2007, and went ahead and has won three World Series since then, and has two Cy Youngs in consecutive years. So I look at him and I kind of think that's a really nice short period of time that almost takes up half of the decade we're talking about, where he could be considered one of the best pitchers, you know, of all time for that period, that brief a period of time. But I think overall, if we're just saying overall as a pitcher career-wise, it's Kershaw.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, I'm looking at Kershaw here. He has won three Cy Youngs, the Timmy's two.
Oh.
And he just doesn't have the titles. And, I mean, it wouldn't be a stretch to say that Lincecum contributed nothing to the 2012 and 2014 World Series teams, and very little to he contributed some to the 2010 team, but the 2 years before that were his Cy Young season. So that...
Well, he was the ace of the 2010 team. Let's not forget that. He's the one that, like, beat Roy Halladay in the playoffs and was the Cy Young that year, I think, or maybe not Cy Young, but like in the running for a Cy Young that year.
Yeah, he was 10th that year, but it was the first year that he didn't win the Cy Young that he started more than, you know, 25 games when he was a full-time starter. So you say he was the ace of that staff, huh? Not Matt Cain? Not Jonathan Sanchez? Joe, Jonathan Sanchez threw a no-hitter.
He was the ace in 2010, undoubtedly.
Yeah, he was set up to be the ace. Matt Cain did outperform him, but he was set out to be the ace. Oh, my God, Jonathan Sanchez had a 3.07 ERA that year.
That's right, but his playoff ERA was a little bit higher.
What? Tim Lincecum had the fourth best ERA on that staff.
Of all the pitchers?
Madison Bumgarner in 18 starts had a 3 ERA. Jonathan Sanchez in 33 starts had a 3.07. Matt Cain had a 3.14. Tim Lincecum had a 3.43. And I think you know who had the worst ERA on that staff.
I don't even remember. Oh, of course, Barry Zito.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So that's incredible that he was set up to be the ace. And I remember him being disastrous, but 3.43 is respectable. I remember people were talking about, like, oh, the freak's over that year. I mean, it started to die out after that, but my goodness, he was much better in 2010 than I thought he was.
I would just like to point out that we've managed to turn a conversation about the Dodgers completely into a conversation about Timmy and subsequently the Giants.
Well, we need to talk about what we know here. And we know that we hate the Dodgers. They're really, really good. You know how we were talking about how there wasn't much to talk about with some teams that were just sort of middle of the pack and garbage teams?
Yeah.
That's how I feel about the Dodgers. There's, like, not much to talk about. Like, they're really good. All their players are really good. And they're going to win the NL West again and go to the playoffs. And we'll see what happens there. Hopefully Kershaw implodes.
I would love to see that. But I would like to point out that while McCarthy and Anderson have looked really good in spring training, I think there's some serious injury concern with those two guys. Mm-hmm. And maybe you get a full season combined from both of them, but you certainly don't get two full seasons. And I think with Hyunjun Ryu, already on the DL, that could be a major concern. And Brandon Beachy, who's their other option. I look at a guy like Ryu, and I think he might be the key to their season. If he can come back from his shoulder soreness and pitch like he usually does, then they'll be in good shape. But if this is something that's lingering, then you might have to be a little more concerned about that pitching staff.
I agree, but I think that the issue with the pitching staff is sort of mitigated by the fact that this lineup could put up 8 runs on any given night. They're just so talented, pretty much top to bottom, that I think that it sort of mitigates any questions that they might have about the pitching staff there.
Agreed.
I don't know if there's a better 1-8 offense in baseball.
In baseball?
With Rendon getting hurt and Worth being hurt in Washington, I mean, and Harper's hasn't shown anything yet. I mean, I don't know.
What about the Red Sox?
The Red Sox? They get no offensive production from their catcher. Xander Bogaerts is a question mark. Their outfield, Shane Victorino. I mean, Mookie Betts should be good, but we don't know.
Yeah, but if Victorino doesn't play, then they'll bring in Rosny Castillo. Like they've got options.
But they optioned Rosny Castillo to AAA today. It's the Shane Victorino show, stupidly enough.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I look at, like, I don't know, because I'm looking at, like, even the Padres lineup, and it looks pretty good compared to the Dodger lineup. Like, I'm not even sure the Dodgers have the best 1-8 in this division.
Well, I mean, I don't like Will Middlebrooks. I don't like Alexia Marista. I don't like Will Myers. I think Will Myers has shown that he just doesn't care enough to fix the issues with him, and he's never going to get any better than this. If you get traded, to what? This is his third team in a calendar in 12 months. Like,
yeah.
And every stop in the Royals, they said he didn't do what he needed to do to get better, and the Rays said the same thing. And you know, now he's with San Diego. I think Will Myers might bust out just out of his own stupid approach to how, you know, he should do things.
I mean, it's certainly a risky lineup, and we can get into that later when we talk about the Padres. But I think it's a boom or bust type deal. And when I look at that, I don't know. I see potential.
Yeah.
The Dodgers, let's refocus on the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers have a great 1-8. I just would hesitate to call them the best 1-8 through baseball in baseball.
Wow. Well then, we can agree to disagree, sir.
They're leading off a 36-year-old Jimmy Rollins. That's the only, I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, but I mean, Jacques Peterson's only 23, so if you average those out, that's a guy in his prime.
Right, that's true.
that's just math, Joe. Alrighty, so before we move on to the Giants, speaking of guys in their prime, so Joe, I have a question for you, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or if this is something you have a hard opinion on, but who's a better point guard, Steph Curry or CP3?
Oh, no. Can we wait until the end? I might use up, like, the rest of the podcast to talk about that.
Oh, God. I when I pulled you in on that conversation, I was like, oh, no, what have I done?
Of course.
I've just been getting Facebook alerts, like, all day between you and Jeff Mercado just arguing about CP3 and Steph Curry.
I couldn't sit idly by. I was willing to let the conversation progress normally without being involved, but I could not stand idly by and let Chris Paul be called the fourth best point guard in the league. Like, something about that just ate away at my soul that I had to say something.
Well, and it was a bad statement. I mean, Kyrie Irving isn't a point. He plays the point guard, but LeBron's the point guard of that team. Like, sorry.
Right, and it's not like Kyrie's a bad point guard, but he just doesn't play point guard. So you can't. You just can't say it. You just can't say that he's doing better than Chris Paul.
Yeah, it's an apples to oranges sort of situation. Like, It's like, oh yeah, well, he's the best point guard. It's like, no, he doesn't even play point guard. So how can he be the best point guard?
Yeah, Tyson Chandler's the best small forward. Like, what, you know?
You know who's a really good shooting guard? It's that Tim Duncan guy. He's pretty good.
He's darn good.
Yeah, he's darn good.
A jump shot. I mean, that's what we're looking for, right?
That's true. That's the only criteria. I was gonna jump in with defensive stats, and then I was like, I don't want to get involved. But anyways.
Oh wait, just to touch on that, because we are still talking about baseball. To talk about the Dodgers again.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that is really, and this is where I come with my you know expertise here. The one thing that's really scary about the Dodgers is as good of a team as they have on paper right now, they've got some of the best. Sorry, that would be my.
Oh my God.
Sorry, everything's going haywire. My phone. As good as they look on paper right now, they might have the best prospects in the league, next to the Cubs. They've got two top 10 guys in Corey Seager and Julio Urias.
Mm-hmm.
They have Jock Peterson, of course, who's going to start for them. And they just have, you know, some serious depth in their minor leagues. And Seager might even come up this year. So if Rollins flames out for them, then they still have Seager in their back pocket.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And I think we talked about it before about, you know, is there a team that's been more set up for current and future success, like how scary it is that they're really, really well put together. Their pitching staff is made up of, you know, shoestrings and bubblegum, but other than that, they're really solid all throughout their system. And they've got some guys with some pretty great names, too. Just outside of their talent, I just discovered Billy Bereznewiewicz.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, well, it's just a great name.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So, real quick, before we move on to the Giants, I have a quick question for you. There's a guy in their AAA team. I want to know if you think he cracks the Major League rotation this year. His name is Eric Bedard.
Eric Bedard is pitching for the Dodgers?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I think it's possible considering they don't have a fifth starter right now.
Yeah.
If McCarthy and Anderson both go down, I mean, I think Bedard, even if one of them goes down, I think Bedard could potentially step in.
Yeah, I think there's actually a real possibility he pitches for them in the majors this year. And also, I'm looking through their divisional depth chart on Roster Resource. They have Chad Gaudin, David Ardsma, and David Huff all in their minor leagues. And this is after they gave Brian Wilson $100 billion. Like they're just taking former Giants relievers and stashing them in AAA, I guess.
Jeez, yeah. I mean, I they're gonna need those guys too because Jansen and League are both on the DL.
Yeah, that's true. Who's closing for Chris Hatcher, huh?
I don't know who that is, but they also have Joel Peralta, who has his faults, and Sergio Santos, who certainly has his faults, and JP Howell, who has his faults. So, you know, either Paco Rodriguez steps up, or that team's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, wow. What's weird is they're so top heavy with their pitching staff, and then like the rest of it's just with Kershaw and Greinke, and the rest of their pitching staff's just sort of a mess. Like they're all injured or garbage.
Yeah,
or both. That's what I
tried to touch on at the very beginning when I looked at them, and I said, you know, there are some things that have to go right, and one of those things is Rio needs to come back and pitch well.
That's very true. So, all right. So I think that 23 minutes on the Dodgers is quite enough.
Thank God. Are we moving on?
Yeah. So let's move on to the Giants. San Francisco Giants, they were 88-74. They finished 6 games out of first place. They won a little thing called the World Series of Baseball, 4-3 over the Royals. And we don't even... They won the World Series, so a successful season, no doubt about it. No matter what happens, Yeah, you could have literally nobody in your minor league system, and if you win the World Series, it's a successful season.
Well, thankfully, that's exactly where the Giants are.
Yeah. So yeah, right. That's exactly where the Giants are. With Gary Brown, being complete garbage junk. Justin Maxwell made the 40-man roster over. Or made the major league roster over Gary Brown. Like, come on. Like, a few years ago, the Mets were like, hey, you've got this Gary Brown guy. We've got Carlos Beltran. And we're like, no, you take Zach Wheeler.
Right.
You take Zach Wheeler and you enjoy it. And
you stay away from Gary Brown.
And now Gary Brown's just like, just a guy. He's quickly becoming just organizational filler. He's running out of time, I think.
Yeah, it's too bad. Fortunately, he won't play into this year, I wouldn't think. Even though the outfield is just decimated, that's the really scary thing, is if there was ever a time for Gary Brown to step up, it would be this year with the outfield injuries, and there's no chance of him making the team.
No, and I mean, let's see, that we've got Hunter Pence with the broken arm, but outside of that, I mean, there's not really anybody that's really injured. Travis Ishikawa, back tightness. I mean, that's, who cares about Travis Ishikawa? But what's scary is he's not even that high on the offensive depth chart. Like, Justin Maxwell made the roster ahead of him. There's Juan Perez, who had to have ahead of Gary Brown.
Wow.
Yeah, there's...
a lot of replacement level players.
Yeah, a lot. I'm looking, and there's just a lot of replacement level players. But it's just Gary Brown just hasn't done anything. And I remember when I saw him with the San Jose Giants a few years ago. I went to a game and I saw Gary Brown. I'm like, this is the guy that I'm supposed to be excited about. Like there was nothing spectacular about him. Like
wow.
He sort of was just around. Like if I remember, he made a pretty nice catch in the outfield, but that was it. He was pretty unspectacular. And a little thing in my head, I was like, uh-oh, this can't be good.
I mean, I think part of that hype was based on the fact that the Giants had won the World Series. Like, when was he drafted?
Gary Brown was drafted in 2010. So it's in the fall, the spring, so it's right before they won the World Series.
Right before they won the World Series. So a lot of the hype surrounding that World Series team, I think, drew a lot of attention to, hey, well, they look great now. What's their future look like? Oh, Gary Brown, and he can steal 25, 30 bases. And so everyone just got really stoked about that, you know?
Yeah, 25 and 30 bases, wow.
You're appearing to Andres Torres, you know? That's.
Oh, God, Giants legend Andres Torres, who was traded for Angel Pagan, and then we had them both back the next season, which was probably the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Right.
So, one thing that was concerning to me about the Giants is we're talking about the depth because not a lot's changed except for the Pablo Sandoval leaving and Casey McGahee replacing him. And the back end of the depth is – the back end and the depth is sort of the question. What's with Andrew Susak getting sent back down to the minors in favor of Hector Sanchez? Because that's a head-scratcher to me.
You know, I think it's silly, and the only explanation for that is it's one of two things. Either they want Hector Sanchez to get as much playing time at the major league level so they can shop him, or they want Andrew Susak to get as much playing time in the minors so he can be the next catcher for them. Or so they can potentially trade him. But it's you know, I don't know. It's really confusing because the obvious choice is Andrew Susak over Hector Sanchez.
Yeah, he's pretty much better than Hector Sanchez in every single way. So keeping him in the minors is pretty baffling to me, at least. And it sounds like it is to you too.
I just think there's a trade, and you know, whether it's they're trying to trade Sanchez or trying to trade Susak. I'm not entirely sure, but that seems to be what's at the heart of this kind of move.
Is just show them both off a little bit and then trade one of them, which...
Yeah, I mean, because I think a full season of at-bats from Hector Sanchez in the minors after having been a major leaguer for so long would look less impressive than a full season or half season of at-bats from a guy like Andrew Susak at AAA. So I think that it makes both of them look better to do a move like this, and that's where I'm not entirely sure which one they're trying to trade.
Yeah, I got to agree with that, because once you're in the majors, whatever you do in the minors is no longer important. So having Sanchez down in the minors, it's like, okay, so he's hitting off of, you know, guys throwing worse balls than he's used to. Of course he's going to tee off on them.
Right.
So another concerning piece of Giants death that I think we need to pull the plug on, I just don't think Hunter Strickland ever needs to come back up to the majors again.
Oof, that was fast.
He's everything I've seen from him has been bad. He can throw 100, but it goes in a straight line.
Yeah.
Like, there's no movement to any of his pitches. He can throw 100, and that's pretty much it. There's nothing to him, and he's going to be 27 this year. He's kind of becoming what he is, and he got tattooed in spring training again. I mean, he got tattooed in the playoffs, and he got tattooed in spring training. Like, can he only pitch in the regular season? Is that what it is? Spring training and the postseason just completely baffle him?
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I'm starting to think that unless he can, you know, start to develop in right field, there's no way he's ever going to make the majors again. Because if there's one spot that the Giants don't need help at, it's probably their bullpen.
Yeah, that's arguably their greatest strength, is their bullpen, I would think. Even with guys like Madison Bumgarner and, you know, the corpses of Tim Hudson, Ryan Vogelsong, Tim Lincecum, Matt Cain, and Jake Peavy, and Yusmeiro Petit, I mean, their strength really is that bullpen.
Yeah, and even if Ryan Vogelsong and Petit end up replacing some guys in the rotation, they've got guys in the minors that can step in and help them out that are more suited to be a major league pitcher than Hunter Strickland is.
Yeah, I saw some of Chris Heston, one of his starts. He was pretty good. I liked him. I don't think he's ready yet, but he's 27, so it's sort of, he's going to be one of those short career guys. It's probably going to be, unless it's catastrophic injuries across the Giants, we probably don't see him till next year. And then, even then, he's a back of the rotation guy, I think. But I also think maybe that's when we finally see Kyle Crick.
Oh, is when?
Next year.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's about time. Can we see him and Clayton Blackburn and all these other guys, Adalberto Mejia, Chris Stratton, all these guys that we've heard about for years?
Hopefully we see at least one or two of them, and we don't continue to trot out, Tim Lincecum, who we've gone over it a lot. Tim Lincecum is not deserving of a starting rotation spot any longer. You've long been a proponent of Tim Hudson. Was it relief pitcher or Tim Hudson? Or sorry, Tim Lincecum relief pitcher or Tim Lincecum closer? I forget.
Well, I've been an advocate of Tim Lincecum closer, but that has a lot to do with how much they were paying him, so it could at least be somewhat justifiable. But now the more I've watched him, he can pitch 2 to 3 innings really well in the middle of games. It's just he cannot start a game. I don't know what it is, but he can't pitch well in the first inning of a game or the fifth inning of a game. And I've seen it for 3 years now. So if you cut out those two innings, he's good for 3 innings right in the middle, and that seems to be what needs to be his job.
Yeah, and so he, in more ways than one, is he going to become the next Barry Zito? Because it looks like that's the role Zito's going to fill for the A's.
You know, I'm hoping not. I just think when you have a personality like Tim Lincecum and a guy who's had as much success as him, that there has to be a way you can turn him into a closer. And this seems to be the best time that maybe you could do that, because Casilla is by no means a lockdown closer. And Sergio Romo has taken a step back. Gene Machi, who I thought might be able to fill in there, he kind of regressed toward the end of last season, and they ended up trading Heath Embry at some point over the last couple seasons, and he was supposed to be their closer of the future. So this might be the time to say, hey, Tim, we still want you to be a big part of this team. We just don't want you as a starter anymore.
Yeah, I agree to a point. I actually think that Sergio Romo is due for a bounce back this year. I think he is going to take that job back from Santiago Casilla, because Casilla's looked like hot garbage during spring training. Romo's looked really good, and Romo actually didn't do as poorly as you would expect last year, but what happened was he just had a ridiculous home run to fly ball ratio, so he was just popping dingers out of the park.
I mean, that's always been – he has a history of that, though. Like, that's not just what he produced last year. When he was first trying to develop into closer, he was getting knocked around for a solo home run here or a home run that would lose the game there. You know, he's always kind of had a problem keeping the ball in the park, and that's really concerning for someone who pitches in such a pitcher-friendly park.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, to your point, last season he had a 13% home run to fly ball ratio. 2 years ago it was 12.2. But in between there, he had a sub-8, which was good. And before that, he had a very respectable home run to fly ball ratio. So if he can just get back to his 2013 and 2011 and prior form, I think he's going to take the role back. There's not much about him that's really showing that he's losing it. I think it was just pure bad luck. You know, he grooved a couple balls. Let me look up his velocity last season and see. Oh my God, his fastball is not fast at all. Because he's a slider pitcher. He throws a lot of sliders.
Yeah, he throws fast sliders. Like,
yeah, that's what it is. Okay, yeah, because his fastball is only 88 miles an hour, give or take. So he hasn't lost any velocity on that. His slider is actually faster last year. There's not much about his pitches that changed last year to show, you know, why he was hanging meatballs. So I don't know. It's just a gut thing, I think.
A lot of with him, it really isn't anything to do with the speed. It has to do with the location. Like, oftentimes, because he has to rely on a slider a lot more than his fastball, obviously, if he leaves that a little bit up in the zone, or if it doesn't break the right way, it can get clobbered out of the ballpark because it's only going, you know, mid to high 80s. So,
yeah, that's true.
I think it's more location. So if he can get his control back, I would say, then he can take the role back and become good again.
I certainly hope that becomes the case, because I do like what, I mean, it's a purely personal, you know, I do like watching him pitch. I like the emotion and the energy he has out there. And I just think he's a pure better pitcher than Santiago Casilla. I mean, that's the long and the short of it.
Completely agree.
Yeah, so what do you think the Giants are going to do this year? Do you think they can overcome the drop down from Pablo Sandoval to Casey McGahee?
I think that they have more of a chance of surviving that than they do of, you know, a Norishiki Aoki replacing Hunter Pennsteel and having to survive a full season of Gregor Blanco.
What? I don't think it's as bad as that. I mean, hopefully Nori Aoki.
It's pretty bad.
It's okay. I think it's okay. Pence will be back sooner rather than later, I think.
Okay.
You know, an arm break's a fairly straightforward thing. There's not, especially a forearm break like that, there's not a lot of, you know, lingering stuff. Because, I mean, I broke my arm, and once it's better, it's pretty much better. The only problem is you have to worry about strength with it, because you're not supposed to use it. I could barely move, but I think that he'll be okay. He'll be back in the, you know, form by end of May. He'll be fine. That'll push Blanco to the bench right up until Angel Pagan gets hurt. And then we call up Juan Perez. And
It's just, if I could interject here, just so we don't go further down this hellish path that you put us on. I think the thing that really scares me about Hunter Pence is that it's his arm, and that I think about the way that he swings the bat, and it's so violent that even if he swings and misses a few times, there's some chances of re-injuring that arm. So I worry about not him maybe getting back in a timely fashion, but what is he going to be like when he gets back?
Oh, he'll be fine. I mean, it's a broken arm. It's not like he's going to swing so violently he snaps his arm again. That would be some superhuman strength stuff.
I mean, there's a lot of reverberation when you hit a ball coming at you 90-something miles per hour.
That's true. But I'm sure they had to deal with Pablo Sandoval breaking his, 25 hamate bones, even though you only have two. And so, I mean, this staff has an experience with helping people back from bone breaks in the arms. I just don't think it's going to be that bad. It can't be that bad, because I love Hunter Pence, and he's going to be great.
I mean, it's just one of those things that I don't know enough about to really get overly scared about, but there are questions that I have that cause me to stop and think.
But at the same time, I don't know enough about bones to, like...
I don't know anything about bones.
Yeah, I'm like... It's like, do you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes, of course.
It's like when Charlie was like, oh yeah, you burn the trash and then the smoke goes up into the sky and it makes stars. And you're like, right. That doesn't sound right, but I don't know enough about stars to argue.
Really,
yeah, that's sort of how I feel about the bone reverberations. I'm like, I don't know enough about bones to...
Yeah, no, that's exactly how I feel as well. Before we go on, there is one thing, of course, I want to talk about before we move on, and that's the guy I think might be the most important player for them overall, which is Brandon Belt. I think he's turning 27 this year, so you know how I kind of fall in love with players that are about to turn 27. I think he will produce his best season yet. And the Giants are going to need it to stay afloat, at least until Pence gets back. He's a guy that last season it looks discouraging on its face. If you just look at it and say, okay, well, he only played, had 235 plate appearances, 214 official at-bats. He hit 12 home runs with 243, so his average dropped from 289 to 243, and his home runs dropped 5 home runs. But then again, he didn't play a full season. I just think he had the broken thumb that kept him out for a long period of time, which kind of threw off some early season success where he went out in April and March, hit 7 home runs with a .255 average. So still a low average, but the 7 home runs in April is really, you know, really catches the eye. And then he went out the next month in May, hit .304 with 2 home runs. So it kind of looked like he was bringing the average back up. And then, of course, the injury set in. And from that point on, he was underwhelming until the very last month in September, where he hit .286 with a home run, and then, of course, in the postseason where he had some success. So, to me, Brandon Belt is going to have to hit like a middle-of-the-order hitter in order for this team to even compete this year.
So, my question is this. Last year, Brandon Belt is essentially a lost season. He only played, 60-something games? He missed, 100 games. So, essentially, we had replacement-level first base all year.
Right.
Now, Belt takes the step forward. Was this sort of a calculated risk in letting Pablo Sandoval go and replacing him with Casey McGahee, in that Brandon Belt should be expected to replace his production in the lineup, and then they know they can get by with a dead hole in the lineup, and they'll just plug Casey McGahee in there?
I mean, I think it certainly was until Hunter Pence went down, and now it looks kind of like a panic scenario. I think, speaking of panic, by the way, another guy they expected. Did you like that transition? I think the early season success of Brandon Belt and the expectation of him taking a step forward this season, Hunter Pence's monster season last year, and Joe Panic coming up and being the best second baseman that they've had since, I'd say, Ray Durham, it really kind of made letting Pablo go seem a little easier.
I mean, yeah, it could be that. Panic fills just sort of a high average role. I mean, he'll score a lot of runs, but that's a product of the lineup. But I want to roll it back a little bit. I think you disrespected somebody.
Uh-oh.
Freddie Sanchez?
Oh, I like Freddie Sanchez, but he wasn't really...
good for the Giants?
He was good for the Giants. I mean, he did bring us to that first World Series. But
yeah.
If I had to pick a player that I think is going to be better, I mean, what are we talking about when we talk about Freddie Sanchez, but a guy that can hit 300 and get on base a decent amount? So yeah. There's nothing really that separates Joe Panic from Freddie Sanchez to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, age. I think I'd take 2015 Joe Panic over 2015 Freddie Sanchez, but that's just me, Joe.
But I'll say Joe Panic in his prime has potential to be better than Freddie Sanchez.
Oh, wow. That I can see that. I mean, Freddie's
23. Or 24, sorry.
Yeah, so I can see that. I was just saying, said best since Ray Durham. There's a soft spot in my heart for Freddie Sanchez. I actually can mentally replay the play where he injured his shoulder. I can see it in my head. I was a big Freddie Sanchez fan.
So. Oh, I loved Freddie Sanchez. I mean, I touted that trade majorly, but I love Joe Panic too. So I'm kind of the thing that I look at in regards to the Giants is if Angel Pagan can avoid that inevitable step back for speed-based players, and it doesn't affect his outfield defense. I actually like their outfield defense and their middle of the diamond defense, and maybe even their defense all the way around, with the exception of Casey McGehee. I like their defense. All these guys can play defense. It's just a matter of whether they're going to hit.
Yeah, and I mean, that's sort of the roster they've constructed. There's no guy in the lineup, maybe with the exception of Buster Posey, that gets other pitchers, you know, quaking. But, I mean, three World Series in 5 years, a lot of timely hitting, a lot of, you know, just manufacturing runs, you know, scratching stuff out. They've put together a team that can do that, and they've sort of taken advantage of the fact that they do play in a pitcher's park, so they do have a lot of space to work with in the outfield, and, you know, they do have quality pitching, so you need to put a solid defensive staff behind them. So I wonder if that's a construct of being an AT&T park and having such a quality staff, is that they've sought out these types of players.
Quality staff, as in of a few years ago, right?
Well, the bullpen's part of the staff, Joe.
Okay, of course. Of course.
Plus, we have our new Lord and Savior, Madison Bumgarner.
He's the greatest.
Yeah, he pretty much is. And he's grown a sweet beard. Like, his beard got really long, so now he actually looks like Jesus. So it's pretty great. He's pretty much exactly becoming our Lord and Savior.
Where do you stand on Matt Cain? I know we're spending a lot of time on the Giants, but this is obviously the team we know the most about. Where do you stand on Matt Cain going into 2015? Is he a bounce-back candidate, or are we really as worried about him as we were about Tim Lincecum a couple years ago?
I don't know. That's. Do you like that answer? You want to move on?
Sure.
No, I don't know what to think about Matt Cain, because I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was 2013 when he really started to struggle. Yeah, 2013. I looked into it, and what happened was he just lost velocity pretty hard on his fastball, and players were making a lot more contact with it, and that's what was leading to him getting lit up all the time. And then last season he struggled again, but then he went under the knife and got, I think it was bone spurs, cleaned up. So I'm not sure what exactly to think about it, because even his spring training was confusing, because he was good in his first start, and then he got lit up. But that's not – I mean, but spring training stats are pretty much meaningless. I'm worried about it, but I'm not saying it's over, but I'm worried and doubtful.
So I'm going to go ahead and say that I am a little worried about him, even though I'm somewhat optimistic. He's pitched in the league since he was 20, so he's going to be entering his 11th season. And when he came to the league, I looked at him, and maybe this is partially from being a Giants fan and the bias that comes along with it, but I looked at him and thought, this guy reminds me so much of Jason Schmidt. It's not even funny.
Schmidt.
Like, the way he pitches, he just throws a seamless, fast fastball, and he looks durable, and he just looks – he's just a thick, like a giant pitcher that can consistently hit 93, 94, hit his location, just a solid pitcher. And Jason Schmidt started to decline right around his 11th season and then fell off the map. I mean, like, it was sudden for him. Now, granted, he didn't have the track record that Matt Cain had for his whole career, but he went from being a Cy Young candidate – for a couple of years with the Giants when he in 2003-2004, to taking a step back, to taking a slight step forward, making the All-Star game, and then falling completely off the map, all within a matter of, you know, 4 years.
Yeah, that actually, yeah, the Jason Schmidt, not only body type, but repertoire and career arc is kind of scary to me now, because yeah, that what everything you're saying makes a lot of sense, where he had this frame that could take 200 plus innings every year, sort of abused it and maybe worked it into the ground. And I'm wondering if that's what the Giants did with Matt Cain, and that's what they're gonna do with Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, I mean, Cain was the only – I mean, I think we might be a little bit better with Bumgarner. I'm at least praying we are, and obviously this last postseason didn't do any justice to that theory. But yeah. I look at Cain, and he is the only one of our pitchers that was around in the Dusty Baker era, I think.
Oh, God, the pitcher abuse era?
Yeah, and to a lesser extent, the Felipe Alou era, where he just didn't really know what he was doing.
Yeah.
So he's had to pitch a lot of innings for this team, and it's just it seems like it could be a scenario where he's breaking down finally.
Yeah, and I mean, the attitude that was had about Matt Cain for so many years really supports that, because it was like, oh, you know, El Caballo, the horse, you know, you can just plug this guy in, he can pitch forever, and you know, that's, you know, nobody can pitch forever.
Yeah, and I think they're finally starting to get that now. It's just too bad they had to dole out an insane contract to him only a couple years ago.
Well, that's how the Giants roll. I mean, you get an insane contract, and then you're very, very bad. That's how they build their pitching staff.
Yeah, but usually it's not for 7 years. Barry Zito, which is we obviously know how that turned out.
Yeah, we won 3 rings with him.
It's true.
So it can't be all bad. I mean, honestly, I'm going to be honest. I would do the Barry Zito contract again only because we got 3 rings out of it. That made it completely worth it. Even though he didn't contribute to most of it, it's the result.
The Aubrey Huff contract again, though?
Oh, God. Well, I think it was 2 years, $20 million. Yeah. I hate that stupid Aubrey Huff contract.
Okay. I do think we need to move on, but can we just say outlook for next season? So I thought the Dodgers are probably going to finish first. Mm-hmm. When I look at the Giants, I have this weird feeling we're going to finish third at the highest.
Oh, wow. I was pegging them for right around the same as last, or a few wins back from last year. I'm not as bullish on San Diego. I pegged the Giants at like 85 wins.
Okay.
And I paid...
I think right under 500.
Oh, wow. You're really pessimistic about these guys.
I am.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think maybe... we haven't...
Year.
Yeah, it's an odd year. That's true. I'm fighting fate. But we haven't done a bet in a few podcasts. You want to do a bet that the Giants... Okay. I think the Giants will finish over 500.
You're picking over, I'm picking under?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What happens if they finish 500?
I think we decided Bloodsport.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, Bloodsport.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. So, we've successfully talked the Giants to death. We're going to have to speed up a little bit here. Luckily, the fourth and fifth place teams are complete garbage, so there's not much to talk about. But before we talk about them, we have the revamped San Diego Padres, who ended up in third place last season with a record of 77-85, but they completely rebuilt their team. Joe, I mean, they rebuilt the team, so it's pretty obvious your answer, but were they successful or unsuccessful last season?
I would say they were unsuccessful last season, obviously. Mm-hmm. Just because, yeah, you don't blow up a team if you were successful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty much a cause and effect thing. You don't do what they did. If you're like, yeah, I think we're, good effort all around. I wish it was better, but, you know, it is what it is. They gutted their team.
Yeah, it's almost unrecognizable.
Yeah, I put together that by the numbers thing that got published today on Fantasy Pros, and six players at least are making their debut for the Padres on Monday. So, there's five out of eight guys in the field, and then James Shields. So it's insane.
Yeah, it's just, it's a very kind of confusing, maybe not confusing because they were bad, but it's unexpected, certainly. I mean, the Padres have never been a team that goes out and signs this many guys to new contracts. And it was all done really through the trade market. I guess the contracts is... I shouldn't say contract. They're never the kind of guys that go out and acquire this many big-name players.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They don't make splashes.
Yeah, and they made some pretty significant ones this year. I mean, you touched on James Shields, who is arguably the most sought-after starting pitcher in the market. Next to David Price, sorry.
And, well, Max Scherzer. You're forgetting about Scherzy.
I did forget about Scherzer. But Shields was right there with those guys, if only for the fact that he made the playoffs last year and made it all the way to the World Series. So he became a more recognizable pitcher. Then they go out and they get, you know, an uber prospect that has kind of somewhat floundered to this point, but certainly carried all the talent of a guy like Bryce Harper or, Stanton, or maybe not Stanton, but Harper when he came to the league, and Will Myers, everyone kind of thought would be a superstar by this point. And he's still only 24. They go out and they get Matt Kemp and Justin Upton, who are two guys that played in the middle of very strong lineups, and they're not as old as I thought they were. Kemp is only 30 this year. Justin Upton is only 27, so he's in the prime. Both of those guys are still somewhat in the primes of their career. They go out and get Derek Norris from the A's. They go out and get Will Middlebrooks from Boston. They somehow managed to retain Jed Giorko through all these trades. There's just a lot going on with this team that's pretty impressive. I mean, they have Carlos Quinton on the bench.
Well, Carlos Quinton arguably should be on a park bench, retired, feeding birds. I don't know how that guy's still around.
Did he your last year? I guess I was just kind of throwing his name out there.
Yeah, Carlos Quinton, he's just a guy that just sort of, he has a very narrow skill set, and I mean, I guess he fills a role, but I don't know. I've not liked Carlos Quinton for a few years to that now, even though he broke Zach Greinke's shoulder last year.
I mean, he's been somewhat successful. He had, with the exception of last year where he only hit 177, He hit .275 the year before with 13 home runs in 276 at bats. And then the year before that, he hit .261 with 16 home runs. So, and he's not ancient. He's, you know, 32 years old. So he's at least a guy that can step in and pinch hit for them.
That's true.
Cameron Maben and Will Venable are both guys that can fill in if, say, Will Myers doesn't live up to his potential or, you know, they're just, I don't know, they have a lot of options. They have a lot of pieces, and if a few of the guys don't work out, they have guys that can step in and replace them.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's a testament to the fact that they rebuilt this team by trading lower guys aren't ready for the, mostly not ready for the majors. They sort of gutted their farm system just a little bit to do this. So they essentially put better players on top of an existing team. So that's why guys like Maben and Venable, Carlos Quentin, they make up a really strong bench for them. Because those guys were dependent on them.
They're to be starters.
Yeah. Those guys have been starters for them. So, it was good for them to get these guys. I really like, more so than their hitting acquisitions, who I do, I'm going to be honest here, I think it was a bit of fantasy baseball, just going out and acquiring names. Will Middlebrooks hasn't been good in a couple of years. He's not going to get any better in Petco. Will Myers, we already touched on Will Myers and my feelings on him. It's a little bit of fantasy baseball, but I like the pitching staff that they've put together. And sort of we talked about before, putting a better player on top of existing players, putting James Shields as the ace and moving everybody down a slot, I mean, that's a solid staff. There's not a lot of depth there, but I do like the staff.
I don't really see anybody, because they lost Josh Johnson and Corey Lubke for the year, I don't really see, or at least, I guess they had their surgeries last year, so I don't know if they're going to be coming back at any point in this season. If they do, that certainly can add to the depth for the starters. But I just think, you know, 1 through 5, they have the most solid staff in this division, hands down. James Shields is a pitcher that has been a very good pitcher most of his career, pitching in ballparks that are known for giving up a little bit of offense. So the move to arguably the best, the most pitcher-friendly ballpark in baseball, in Petco, will only help him. Yes. Tyson Ross and Andrew Cashner and Ian Kennedy all took major steps forward last year. And if they can all stay healthy, and you've got, you know, a dice roll with Brandon Morrow, but again, another guy who never pitched in a pitcher-friendly ballpark and who did carry a lot of potential when he was younger. I just think they have the best 1 through 5.
In the NL West, I can agree with that. Just because the Dodgers' rotation is very top-heavy, the Giants' rotation has a ton of question marks, and the staff aces of the Rockies and Diamondbacks are Kyle Kendrick and Josh Coleminter, respectively, so that's all you need to know about them.
Great.
Yeah, those teams are hot garbage, and there's nothing to talk about on the Diamondbacks of value. So, this season, you said that the Giants are going to finish, you think, in third place. So that means, obviously, that you think that the Padres are going to end up second in the division. Do you see them making the playoffs, or...?
I do. I think this is a team that has committed to winning this year, obviously by gutting its farm system. They're the kind of team that if some of their depth still looks tradable, they will trade it to fill whatever hole they haven't already thought of. And I just think that they are going to really, maybe not surprise because everybody's heard of them by now, but I've never been a person who believes that you need to gel right away, like that a team just constructed out of nowhere can't make it happen, because I've seen enough teams that do that it ends up working. So I think that tends to be overrated in baseball, and I think this team is going to gel really quickly. It's not like anyone's been a staple, you know. There's no Padre that they look at and say, hey, you've been the guy for this team for years, so we'll take a back seat to you. They all have the opportunity to step forward and become the face of this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, even Jed Jerko could pull that off. Not really, but they're not going to be selling a lot of panda hats, put it that way. There's no like big personality, big, you know, guy that you can point to and like that's Mr. Padre. I mean, before the season, who would it be? Kashner? Tyson Ross? Yeah. There's no Mr. Padre on this team, and it does fill a vacuum, and hopefully they all try to fill that vacuum and step up and.
Well, hopefully not. We are still Giants fans.
No. Hopefully for them.
Right.
Well, apparently the Giants, it's a lost season. We're not going to win anyways. We're just biding our time till 2016.
Okay. We'll throw this one to the Padres then.
Yeah, the Padres can have this one. We gave it to the Cardinals. Now the Padres can have this one.
Really quick before we move on, I really like their bullpen. I like Benoit a lot. I really like Quackenbush. I think that he could, you know, be a closer on other teams. And Dale Thayer, I really like. Dale Thayer and Sean Kelly. So I like the way that their team is put together. Let's just put it that way.
There you go. And what about their long reliever? This is a guy who I love listening to podcasts because everybody says his name differently.
Adrisimer Despain.
Is that how you say it? Everybody says it differently. I would go with... Odrisamer Despagne is my
Despagne. Guess. I've heard that.
Despagne, too. Yeah. All right, so Baseball Reference actually does have a pronunciation guide. So it's Odrisamer Despagne. Oh, it was close.
Despagne. All right.
Despagne, yeah. So, all righty. Anything more about the Padres? You think they're making the playoffs? I don't think they're making the playoffs. I think they're going to be just outside.
I don't think they're making... Yeah, can I go back on that? I don't think they're making the playoffs because I forgot about my darling Cubbies, who... Things have changed for them since we last talked about them and them getting John Lester. So I think that they are going to be the surprise team that makes the playoffs this year.
So it's going to be the Dodgers, the Nationals.
Yeah.
Who? The Cardinals.
No.
No?
No.
Do you think the Cubs are winning the NL Central?
If you're going to put me on the spot, I mean, is this another hot take?
Can we bring No, this is another hot take. I'm trying to parse out who you think's making the playoffs in the NL.
I think the Chicago Cubs are going to win that division. I the more I look at them, the more I'm baffled at how they managed to pull this team off. I really like them a lot.
Oh, just admit it. You are in love with Theo Epstein.
I am.
Just a little bit?
I love the guy. I love Chris Bryant. I love Jorge Soler. I love Anthony Rizzo. I love Jake Arrieta. I'm sold on all these guys.
How do you feel about Arizmendi Alcantara?
I love Arizmendi Alcantara.
Wow.
I love Addison Russell. He might not even play for them this year. I mean, I love everything about that team. So I think that they are going to take a step forward. And okay, I like the Redbirds, but they're just not. There are more holes with them than I see on the Cubs. And I think that there are other guys. I think the Cardinals will contend. Let me just say that. But I just think they're gonna fall right outside. They might make the wild card, but they're probably gonna fall outside of the playoffs. There are other teams that I really like. Like I think the Mets are gonna make a comeback, even though they lost Wheeler. There are teams I like just all over. I don't know.
Okay. Wow. You really love the Cubbies. Don't read my by the numbers piece then, because I basically said, yeah, the Cubs aren't going anywhere this year, so keeping Chris Bryant in the minors was a smart move.
No. I mean, I think it's a smart move. I don't know. I think the Cubs are so talented that it's going to be a thing to behold.
Are they the next dynasty? They're going to just win like 8 World Series in a row. They're going to be so good that it destroys baseball. They shut it down because nobody can beat the Cubbies.
Could be. I mean,
nobody has a time machine to say otherwise. All right, so enough about the Chicago Cubs. We need to get a move on here. We need to move on to the two teams that have no chance of doing anything at all this year. That would be the Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks. First up is the Rockies. They were 66-96 last year. They finished 28 games out of first place, and they lost 60 games away from Coors Field, which is an incredible number. Joe, were they successful or unsuccessful last season?
Unsuccessful for a lot of reasons, but none more glaring than the fact that all of their pitchers that they were hopeful about took a step back, and Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez could not piece together a full season between them.
No, and I think that every year we could do this for the next 5 years, and every year we'd say that they were unsuccessful, only because they hinge so much of their hopes on two superstars that cannot stay on the field to save their lives. Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez are just, you just pencil them in for 40 games missed every year. At minimum, they start, that's where they start.
Yeah.
And then it gets worse from there. You put on top of that, you put the inconsistency of Charlie Blackmon, and the only person you can really get, you know, put a star next to in their hitting lineup is Nolan Arenado, and even he hasn't, Corey Dickerson.
Yeah.
Even Nolan Arenado hasn't proven himself. You know, he has a good pedigree, but he hasn't done it for, you know, multiple seasons. He's only 24 years old.
Yeah, he's only 24. I think that's coming this year.
I absolutely agree. I love Nolan Arenado.
I think we made a bet that he's going to hit 28 home runs, right? Isn't that an ongoing bet?
I do believe so.
And I think I took the over.
You did, because originally you said he was going to hit 30, and I was like, I'll take it. So what's sad about how bad their lineup is that their pitching staff is even worse.
Compared to their pitching staff.
I mean, you realize that they will have two relievers that will be over 40 years old this season, Rafael Betancourt and LaTroy Hawkins. And it gets worse from there because they have a – I think I said about the Twins, they have a staff of twos and threes. The Rockies have a staff of fours and fives and sixes. Like, none of them are any good. Kyle Kendrick is really, really bad.
Yeah.
And he's their staff ace by default.
Where do you really look to this staff to get excited? Is it guys like Jordan Lyles and Tyler Matzek who are approaching 25, former prospects that have not been able to piece it together up until this point? Or Chad Bettis and Christian Bergman, who I don't know who they are.
Chad Bettis, Christian Bergman. I'm looking at their pitching staff. It's a who's who of who. Like, you're like, who are all these people? And when you're asking is if, hey, are these two failed prospects something to get excited about, then that really tells you what you need to know about the Rockies rotation. It's just bad, and there's nothing to get excited about. Do they have anything in the minors that's worthwhile?
No.
No? Oh, no, they do. They have one starting pitcher who everybody loves him. Number 41 in your playbooks, number one in your heart, Jer Jurgens is apparently in their minor league system.
Oh. I mean, you know the weird thing is when you said that name, I knew I'd heard it before, but he's one of those guys that's worked his way so far out of the league that I had to stop and think about who Jer Jurgens is for a second.
He's the new Eric Bedard. He's the guy who not get hurt and put in 162 game season. What record will the Rockies have? Will they finish above 500? Is that the ceiling with this team as currently constructed in this like absolute best case scenario? Is it 500?
I think it's slightly above 500 because I think if that manages to happen, they'll go out and find a starter. Or they've always been a team that if they scored enough runs, it doesn't matter that they have bad pitchers because teams are scoring runs against them anyway. Like, they've always been a team that's been able to overcome a really bad pitching staff. And but even though this one is bad by even their past standards. But I think they're a 500 team or a slightly above 500 team and maybe third in the division. And that's assuming Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez play all year. Because you got to remember, these are two of – they're still only 30 years old, two of the best players at their positions in baseball when they're playing.
Absolutely.
Corey Dickerson is came out as a monster. Nolan Arenado, I think we both think, is going to be a top five offensive third baseman and defensive third baseman, maybe just all around. We can, you know, crap all over Charlie Blackmon, but he put together a really nice season last year. And so did Drew Stubbs, who was sitting on their bench. So if Blackmon falls off the face of the earth, go ahead and throw in Drew Stubbs, and maybe you'll get similar production. Justin Morneau has somewhat revitalized himself on the Rockies. So I look at a lot of these – I look at the whole lineup in general, just the offense, and I think this is a really nice offense if Tulowitzki and Gonzalez play all year.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with that, but the big question is, you know, is this pitching staff is just so bad that they can't seem to they won't be able to put anything together that can make them actually contend.
And the thing is, if they're not contending, guys like – they're going to look at guys like Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki and even Justin Morneau as potential trade – and Charlie Blackmon probably too – as potential trade pieces.
Yeah. I wonder if they cut bait, if they cut their losses and just move forward with a trade one of those guys for some – minor league pitchers to bolster that depth, because they know they're not getting full seasons out of them at this point. And so I wonder if they just move on and decide, you know what, it's not really worth it to try to do this because we're not getting anywhere with them.
I mean, honestly, they're a prime candidate team to completely blow everything up.
Yeah, and I think that would be the smart move. A lot of times I'm not really a proponent of blowing things up, unless you're in, you know, super dire straits, and I think this is a super dire strait. I think they need to move on with their lives, cut bait, and rebuild.
I will say that their best prospect that I know anything about is probably Eddie Butler, but he's suffering from shoulder fatigue and might miss the beginning of the season. And he's a starting pitcher.
Jesus. This team is very, very, very snake bitten. It seems like nobody can stay healthy on that squad.
Yeah.
But alrighty. So I think
I think they're the fifth place team. Can I just say that with confidence?
What?
I think they're the fifth place team at the
end. Oh, wow. So, all right. So good. I want to move on and hear what you have to say about the Diamondbacks, because as bad as I feel, games out of 500, Joburg. Why are they going to be better than the Rockies?
So they're going to be better for a few reasons. One of that is that they have a guy that can stay on the field who is the best player at his position in Paul Goldschmidt. Unless you're counting Miguel Cabrera. Well, I guess Miguel Cabrera is a first baseman. But it's pretty close between those two. I mean, uh-huh. We see Goldschmidt outproduce Cabrera this year. But they've got Paul Goldschmidt. They have A.J. Pollock, who pieced together a really nice year for them last year, who was 27. Aaron Hill, who is still producing. Trumbo, who can still produce well for them. Jake Lamb, their prospect, third baseman from the minors, who hasn't established himself yet but could certainly do so. Chris Owings, who is young, a young shortstop at 23. Yasmani Tomas, who was a big free agent signing from Cuba. You know how I feel about Cubans.
Oh, yeah.
I do have some somewhat concerning things to say about Yasmani Tomas, too, but at least he's Cuban. Let's just put it that way. I like a lot of guys in that lineup, and I really like a lot of their prospects. Like, where their pitching staff is lacking right now, because I'll just read off. I mean, we talked about Colmenter and De La Rosa as being their 1-2, which is certainly uninspiring. Gullickson is also uninspiring, as is Trevor Cahill. Trevor Cahill's a little bit better, but not much. They do have Chase Anderson, who's going to step into the lineup, who was a top prospect for them, and has looked great this spring, by the way. They have Archie Bradley, who could potentially make the big league roster by midseason this year. They have Braden Shipley, who could also make the roster this season. Those are just some of the pitchers that they have that could step into the rotation by midseason. And those two guys, coupled with Chase Anderson, I think could make for a solid 1-3.
Okay, so you think that they just have more promise than the Rockies. You think that they have the ability and the depth to go ahead and take a step forward?
At least post-midseason. Like, if they decide to go out and say, all right, well, we're going to trade... let's just say Trevor Cahill posts a serviceable season for them.
Uh-huh.
And they decide, all right, well, we'll trade Trevor Cahill, or we'll trade Josh Coleman, or we'll trade Roby De La Rosa, because we're not getting any... Or even Jeremy Hellickson. We're not getting anything out of these guys. They're not a part of our future plans. But one of them steps up, and they become tradable. Then that opens up some spots for these guys from the minors to step up.
Yeah, so I was looking at that. I remember hearing something about Trevor Cahill today, and I just looked it up because you keep talking about trading him. He is going to be a Brave.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the Braves are on the verge of acquiring Trevor Cahill. They're not saying for what. This is like breaking news. I just remember I saw it come across while I was just screwing around on the internet, but... it says that Archie Bradley is projected to come in and take Cahill's place. So,
beautiful. So that makes Chase Anderson and Archie Bradley, their 4 and 5 pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Those could be the two best. I mean, that really is their 1-2 if everything pans out for them. So
they definitely have the potential to be the best two pitchers on the staff, because the other three guys, Colmenter, De La Rosa, and Hellickson, are what they are. I agree with that.
Right. So, I mean, I just think they have more promise. And even if this trade doesn't go through and it goes through later, I mean, obviously that just confirmed my beliefs that they are shopping Cahill and probably shopping all of these guys with the exception of Chase Anderson. I just think that even if they struggle and are neck and neck with for fifth place with the Rockies, they'll make enough moves by midseason and bring up some of these guys and be better than the Rockies. That they'll eke out fourth place.
Okay, I can buy that. You've convinced me. I thought that the Diamondbacks were going to wallow in the cellar, but actually, looking at it, I do like who they have. I'm a big Mark Trumbo fan, just because I love dingers. And if Tomas pans out like they hope he does, they definitely have the ability to be better than the Rockies. I think just... over the course of a season, the Rockies will fall apart. So I think you have convinced me, Joe. So congratulations.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Congratulations. They'll be fourth instead of last. So good on you, Diamondbacks. So, Joe, real quick question. Tuffy Goswitch, worst name in the majors?
Yeah. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so. I know it's Tuffy, but, I mean... Come on, man. You should go by something else. Like, do Brock Holt and Tuffy Goswitch have the opposite names? Like, Brock Holt's probably the manliest name I've ever heard.
Right.
And Tuffy Goswitch is the exact opposite.
Who is Tuffy Goswitch?
He's their starting catcher. You're so bad. Okay, I think we should stop this before we start bad-mouthing the Diamondbacks too bad. And I don't think anybody's listening at this point because they're like, oh, Arizona Diamondbacks? No, thank you. I don't care what these Jamokes have to say about them.
They got Cody Ross.
They do have Cody Ross. Do they still have Cody Ross? They do.
Yeah.
They have old Cesari Doc himself. So, all right, I think that's enough on the Diamondbacks. But before we go, Joe, I set my first DraftKings lineup for Monday.
Heyo.
Heyo. And you're the daily fantasy guy, so I wanted to run it past you.
Of course.
All right. So I've got – it's two pitchers and then the positions no utility. So I went with my boyfriend, Henderson Alvarez, against the Braves. I think I told you last time why I was going to do that. I think he will he'll blank him, or at least has a good chance of doing it.
Yeah, you made a very strong case. By the way, I'm working on a potential daily fantasy for that first day of baseball. Fantasy Sports Warehouse, and I did talk about Henderson Alvarez.
Yeah, are you stealing my stats?
I am.
Yes. I'll expect all of your e-kudos, your internet dollars. And then I'm going with Mad Bum because he's playing the terrible Arizona Diamondbacks.
You might have to rethink that after all this talk about Goldschmidt's and Pollock's and Trumbo.
Nah, that's okay.
Okay.
And then I'm going with Jonathan Lucroy against garbage Kyle Kendrick.
Okay.
Then Poppy.
Good.
And then Dozier. I went with Aramis Ramirez just because I needed a third baseman there, and again against garbage Kyle Kendrick. Ian Desmond, because he is one of three players who hit two home runs off the guy they're facing opening day last season. So a little bit of that for you. And then Cargo, Melky, and George Springer, because I think that all three of those guys have a good shot of either hitting a home run or stealing a base, and so that way they can contribute either way. You know, they can get fancy points either way.
Nothing wrong with that, man. I think another good choice at third would be Nolan Arenado, because he's going up against a pretty bad Milwaukee. I think it's Kyle Loesch.
Oh, goodness. Okay, maybe Nolan Arenado there.
And I believe it's in Colorado, so that only makes things, you know, better for him. I kind of like Danny Santana, who's going really cheap for some reason at shortstop.
Danny Santana, huh? I'll look into Danny Santana. But I needed to get Desmond in there because I spent so much time finding that stat of the three players, or of the players who hit multiple home runs off the guy they're facing opening day.
That's and true.
It's Desmond, Braun, and Neil Walker hit two home runs off of Johnny Cueto last year, which is kind of a weird stat. But
you can't go with either of those other guys. So.
No. No, and I point out, I think Walker hit two in 17 at-bats, and he only had, like, two hits in those 17 at-bats, so don't go with Neil Walker.
Right.
Yeah, so. Alrighty, so.
I like the team, but can I also hop in? We haven't done this in a while, but I just have a really brief what's more likely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah?
I promised you so long ago that I would do this, so I compiled three questions. And I they're mostly baseball, but I think they're kind of interesting to discuss. So the first one is Chris Bryant hits 30 home runs or Billy Hamilton steals 70 bases.
Oh, no. Oh, God. That's a good one because I was actually thinking last night. I was like, because when I was trying to figure out the numbers, the by-the-numbers thing, I was like, it's like, Billy Hamilton could steal, like, 75 bases this year. I was like, no, that's crazy. That's too many bases. That's such a ridiculous number.
Right.
But it all depends on how long they keep Bryant in the minors, which I don't think is very long. I'm going to say Chris Bryant hits 30.
I would agree.
Yeah.
But Billy Hamilton was not that far from 70 steals. I mean, I think he had, like, 56 or 57 last year, and he was caught 23 times. So you got to imagine that number is going to go down, and he's going to attempt at least 100.
Yeah, he's going to run wild. And I think that was a good one because I could talk myself into switching it, but I'm going to go with 30 bombs because I love me some Chris Bryant.
Everybody does. By the way, can we give ourselves a pat on the back? I think we're officially the first podcast because we did the NL Central back in November. Or December, we were the first podcast to discuss Chris Bryant ad nauseum.
Oh yeah, so you're blaming it on us is what you're saying? Is it's all our fault?
Yeah, I mean I'm patting myself on the back as being you know the Chris Bryant guy, even though I'm sure there were other you know scouts that are way smarter than me that knew about
yeah.
it.
But you know what? That's an okay thing to pat yourself on the back about, because I was one of the podcasts I listened to. They mentioned that at the winter meetings, some GM was like, "Oh yeah, well I knew all about Madison Bumgarner before the playoffs." Like he was the smartest man on earth, and we're like, "Yeah, everybody knew about Madison Bumgarner before the playoffs." Yeah, I
mean, everyone in Northern California, Nevada, and Oregon knew about Madison.
Yeah, but it was just really funny. It's like, "Oh yeah, you know, you guys are all newcomers." It's like, "No, he was pretty good last year. You're not special." So, all right, Case can be home in a few minutes, so we're gonna wrap it up. So, what are the next two?
Second one, Giants make the playoffs this season, or Heat miss the playoffs this season. The Miami Heat miss the playoffs this season.
Ooh, what's the standings right now in the East?
So Miami Heat, they are, I believe, seventh.
Seventh. Ooh, okay.
And so there are a few teams there that could compete with them.
Okay, I'm pulling up the Eastern Conference standings right now. That's a good one. Eastern Conference is such a mess, though, that I like never know. I don't know who's in and who's out of the playoffs. Let's see. So, 34-40. So they've got 8 games left. They make the playoffs.
The Heat.
Mm-hmm. Because listen to the list of teams they're playing. So they're playing the Cavs right now, but then they play the Pistons, Pacers, Hornets, Bulls, Raptors, Magic, and 76ers.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's kind of tomato can. That's a tomato can rest of season right there. So I'm going to go with the Heat make the play. Or you said, is it more likely the Heat miss the playoffs?
I said that it's more likely the Heat miss the playoffs or the Giants make the playoffs.
Like, Giants make the playoffs.
You're going with the Giants making the playoffs over the Heat missing the playoffs.
I don't see a way that the Heat miss the playoffs, because they have the rest of their teams they play are just so weak that they can beat up on them.
Okay. I think. Oof. Yeah. I mean, it is a tough one, but I think Bosch is out for the rest of the season, right?
Bosch like almost died.
Right, because of the lung stuff?
Yeah, but, Joe, Pistons are last in the Central.
Okay.
Pacers are right above them.
Right.
Hornets are – they're a good squad. I can't say anything bad about the Hornets. No, sorry. I'm getting them confused with the – yeah, I'm getting confused with the Pelicans. God, why did they do that? Yeah, the Hornets are second to last. The Bulls, they're a good squad. They're legit good. But the Raptors are good, too. So that's two losses. And the Magic and 76ers are bottom feeders too. So they're playing six bottom feeders.
Okay, I'm going to say that they're going to lose one of the Detroit-Indiana games. So I really kind of have them pegged for like 3-3. And I think that there are some teams in that division that could potentially take over. Now they are seventh, but I don't know. I think Pacers and Pistons, while they look like bottom feeders, they're like the next two teams that I would be thinking would take the spot. So it's a tough thing. I guess I am going with the Giants making the playoffs.
So. Okay. Perfect. So last one, because Kate just got home. So
third and final one, and this one should be easy.
Okay.
Mike Trout wins the MVP this year again. Or Clayton Kershaw wins the Cy Young again.
Mike Trout.
Good.
Yeah. Because Scherzer could win the Cy Young, but I don't see anybody else winning MVP.
In the AL.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. So, alrighty, that was fun. I like that. Those were some good questions. So I guess we'll wrap it up. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with more fun things to talk about rather than division by division, where we make up things to talk about. And at this point, nobody's listening anymore because it's an hour and 45 minutes. So
oh, wow.
say goodbye, Joe.
All right. Goodbye, Joe.